You're listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. I'm Jennifer Calogaris, and this is episode 112. I'm recording on Wednesday, November 1st. I hope everyone had a nice Halloween. This was the first time we were childless on Halloween. My ninth grader has graduated to not wanting his parents to tag along with his friends on Halloween, which I totally get, but it was a little depressing. By the time this airs, I will have flown to Chicago and back because both my kids have a hockey tournament there. I was so excited that they were finally playing in the same city during the same weekend, but part of the deal with these tournaments is that you stay with your team, which I get, and you stay near the rinks where you play. And unfortunately, their teams were playing 50 miles away from one another. So this will be more of a parallel vacation to Chicago. My son hit send on his first round of college applications. He would not want me talking about this at all, so that's all I will say about that, but I'm so proud of how hard he's worked in school, and I hope he ends up exactly where he wants to be. I've been pretty hands-off throughout this whole experience, which does not seem the norm here in LA, but I can tell you my blood pressure is at a very healthy resting rate, and my relationship with my child is fantastic, so I will take these wins. We are still fostering two dogs. I would very much like to adopt one of them, and I'm just waiting for the paperwork and whatever other bureaucracy has to happen. If anyone in the LA area is looking to adopt a very sweet 5-month-old black male shepherd mix, please reach out and I will get you in touch with the rescue. He hasn't had one accident in our house and he's crate trained. In funny little free library news, I'm always on the lookout for books that my friends will love. I like to think of myself as a book matchmaker. So I was walking the dogs past a little free library and I saw a book that I just knew one friend in particular had to have. It was an advanced review copy, which is like bookish gold to book lovers. I brought it home, snapped a photo, and sent it to her saying, "Look what I grabbed you from the little free library." And she wrote back to let me know that not only had she already read the book, but she was the one who placed the book in the little free library. So at least I know my friend's tastes in books. And now it's time for some bookish news. This news is from September, but it got buried in my notes. According to the New York Times, the Pulitzer Prize Board announced it will expand eligibility for awards to authors, playwrights, and composers who are not U.S. citizens, as was previously the case. This will not begin until 2025, and this seems very appropriate, albeit 108 years late, since Joseph Pulitzer himself was a Hungarian immigrant. Not all awards have been closed to non-U.S. citizens. The Journalism Awards, the History Prize, the Literary Categories, as well as the Music and Drama Awards have been limited to American citizens, which begs the question, what does it mean to create American work? I don't have the time nor the bandwidth to address this on this week's show, just something to mull over. I know Halloween has come and gone, but I really enjoyed reading this piece about a woman whose TikTok has gone viral from trying recipes on tombstones. I did not know that recipes could be on your gravestones. Didn't know that was an option. Of course, I get the connection between food and memory, but the woman known as @ghostlyarchive on TikTok tried these recipes on gravestones and she documents making them. She was inspired by her internship at the Congressional Cemetery in Washington, D.C. Her first recipe was spritz cookies from the headstone of Naomi Odessa Miller Dawson in Brooklyn, and she's since tried 20 other recipes, most of them desserts. And now I can't stop thinking about what recipe I'd put on my gravestone. I do make a mean berry pie. Dan Ackerman, the author of The Tetris Effect, is suing Apple and Tetris for adapting his book into the recent film Tetris. Did anyone watch that movie? I did not. But my mom loved Tetris. She had a Game Boy and would play it on airplanes because it would distract her from her fear of flying, which I've since inherited. Thank you, Mom. Anyhow, Ackerman alleges the film was adapted without his permission. He does say that he sent the book directly to the Tetris Company in 2016, and they used it for the basis of the film. So I will have to follow this story and get back to you once the lawsuit is settled. Born in Norfolk, England, Edward Carey is a writer, illustrator, and playwright. He's the author of many books, including the novels Little and The Swallowed Man, and he teaches creative writing in the English department at the University of Texas at Austin. He has lived in England, France, Romania, Lithuania, Germany, Ireland, Denmark, and the United States. He currently lives in Austin, Texas, which he notes is not near the sea. I'm a bit giddy with excitement over here, as I am just a huge fan of your work, and I can't even believe that I'm saying this, but welcome, Edward Carey, to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jen. It's wonderful to be here.
Where are you calling in from today?
Austin, Texas.
I've never been.
Well, it's the nice part of Texas, people say.
Well, I've read it. I loved it. But can you tell listeners what your latest novel, Edith Haller, is about?
So it is the story of a 12-year-old girl who, through the sort of cruelty perhaps of her father, is not allowed to leave the theatre that she works in. The novel is set in 1901, and Queen Victoria has just died. And the father, to try and gain more audience to his theatre, says that there's a curse on the child and the child cannot leave the theatre. If she does, the theatre will collapse. And so he's leaning into folklore of the time. And so this child, Edith, is grown up with nothing but fantastical things, with the theatre, which she adores, and she's quite dramatic. She dresses in grey and puts ash on her face and walks through the audience. She's not allowed to talk to them. And she's actually often quite ill. And she discovers during one of her convalescence, she's given books to the city of Norwich in the east of England, which is where the novel is set. She comes across, looking through all these ancient pages of Norwich, a terrible secret. And she wants to tell the people of Norwich this awful secret, but she can't speak to them. So she sets about writing a play, and the play brings forward the terrible events of the novel.
So you write a lot of books that are at times steeped in not only the macabre, I would argue, but also have such a strong sense of place. Your novel Little, for example, takes place in the 18th century, and The Swallowed Man takes place, well, in the belly of a whale. In Edith Haller, we're dropped in the early 1900s. What is it about this particular time period that made you decide it would be the perfect backdrop to Edith's story?
Well, it's just, as I said, it's just after Queen Victoria died, and I was thinking of a parallel to England, which, of course, recently lost the longest reigning British monarch, Queen Elizabeth II. And I was thinking of the end of empire and, you know, things not being what they were. But also, there's something about theatre and that time that seems so interesting and fascinating. And I wrote this novel during the pandemic. I long for theatre. And I grew up near Norwich, so I long for home. I spent the pandemic in Austin, Texas. And so going back, going into this sort of very early Edwardian time where everything feels a little uncertain seemed to me absolutely perfect. We still have top hats and things like that, but also now the motor cars being introduced to the world. And so that sort of shift, we don't quite know where it's going, time, and England is feeling less certain about itself. And so that's why I wanted to be there, to be in that past, but also to be in the kind of the height of theatre, and to think of, you know, wonderful Henry Irving would be on stage in London, and his secretary was Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula. So I was leaning into all of that.
Theater is what I missed during the pandemic as well, the most. I don't know that all listeners know that you're a part of a literary power couple. Your wife, Elizabeth McCracken, is the author of incredible works such as The Hero of This Book, which I previously recommended on the show, Bowl Away, and my favorite, The Giant's House, as well as countless others. As an author myself, married to someone in the aerospace industry, can you give me a glimpse into your literary life? Do you read one another's manuscripts? Do you discuss plotting? I'm just so fascinated by the two writer home.
People ask that, say, God, that must be terrible, but actually it's very wonderful. We've been married for 20 years. We've got two kids. We get to a position now, we don't talk about our writing until we've written a full draft. So we won't know what each other is up to for years. And we've discovered that actually keeping it quiet, not just to each other, but to everybody, is a great way of letting a novel be born and letting it be itself, of it growing on its own terms. And then we are each other's first readers. And so we're quite good with each other. The moment finally we get to read the manuscript, we generally put everything else aside and read it immediately and then give comments on it. We're very honest with each other. Not brutal, encouraging, but rigorous.
Well, I'm very happy for you about your setup and just a little bit jealous. I think maybe if I write a novel about airplanes, maybe I'll get a response.
Well, there you are.
You illustrate your novels as well, which adds a whole other rich layer to your books. Can you talk a little bit about your artistic process when you're coupling the written word with your drawings?
Yeah, I always illustrate the characters I write about. I draw them, or I'll sculpt them, or I'll paint them. I need to understand what they look like. If I can't see what they look like, I feel I don't know them. And I think part of that was growing up in England with Charles Dickens, which were sort of fed as if it was some sort of medicine, like cod liver oil. But Dickens always knew what his characters looked like. And I think I was so struck by that as a young age reading him. And for me, I must see the characters. And so for each book, I try and do something in terms of making art that's slightly different from another one. So for The Swallowed Man, which as you mentioned, is set inside the belly of a whale, and it's Geppetto, the father or creator of Pinocchio, stuck inside a fish for 2 years. And I thought, wow, he would make art. And so I wanted to make his art. You know, he was a great creator. He created his own son, most famously, but it's a sort of Frankenstein tale, really. And so I made sort of bits of sculpture for that, and I painted on found objects. I painted on bones. I'm not very hairy, but I have got a friend with a long beard to cut off some of his hair so I could mold it into a paintbrush. So I imagine Geppetto painting inside the whale. For my book called Little about Madame Tussaud, I had her draw throughout the book. I say the drawings are hers, and so it hopefully adds another layer to the book. This is how she sees the world. And for Edith Holler, the illustrations are mostly toy theatres of the Victorian era, so that you could cut out the proscenium arch of the theatre in Norwich where it's set, and all the figures in the all the characters in the novel are toy theatre figures that you could cut out and assemble. And in fact, you could actually cut the novel to pieces and assemble a toy theatre. You don't have to. You could go to my website and just download it. But I wanted that idea of the Edith is a 12-year-old child, and I wanted to see things through her eyes and see you could put down a toy theatre backdrop. And there's this, the father becomes engaged to a strange woman who she's quite frightened of. And I wanted, rather than showing her as she was, to show her as a paper doll that you could assemble. And so the illustrations are slightly off kilter, but feed into Edith's world and Edith's way of looking at the world, which is purely theatrical.
You heard it here first. Edward Carey is not very hairy. Your words, not mine. And my last question, I don't know how much you can divulge, but what are you working on next?
Again, rather like I mentioned with Elizabeth, I am about 200 pages into something, but I'm not sure what it is yet. And so it's probably best not to talk about it.
Understand. Well, now it's time for the books.
So my first pick is Seeking Fortune Elsewhere by Sindhya Banu, which is a collection of stories, sometimes set in India, sometimes set in America. And this is one of the most beautiful collections I've actually ever read. I think it's just out in paperback. The writing is amazing. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. It's sometimes about the immigrant experience. But she looks at the world in such a beautiful, clear way. And the stories, I read them over the summer and I was just gasping with joy at how utterly brilliant they are. And that is Seeking Fortune Elsewhere by Sindhya Banu.
Sounds great. My first pick is Zadie Smith's The Fraud. I have a master's degree in literature with a focus on gender and sexuality in Victorian England. So this book felt like it was written for me. The Fraud revolves around a real historical event, the Tichborne trial, where an Australian butcher claimed that he was the heir to a sizable estate. The case went to trial in England and captivated the country. Was he who he claimed to be, or was he a fraud? And this is merely the backdrop to the novel, which explores the life of Eliza Touche, a Scottish housekeeper for the fictitious novelist William Ainsworth. She's dedicated and has worked for him for over 30 years. She's such a fantastic character. She's smart. She's interested in politics and labor unions and women's rights and the abolitionist movement. And she feels as though her cousin, the writer, is a fraud in his own right. And don't get her started on Charles Dickens, who is a character in this novel. There's so much to discuss here about fraud and authenticity on so many different levels. And I absolutely loved it. And that is Zadie Smith's The Fraud. What is your second pick?
I have to say, I can't wait to read The Fraud as well. I've got it on a table beside me. And as soon as semester lets out, I shall be going to it. So what I have is a memoir called Golem Girl by Riva Lehrer. And I saw Riva Lehrer doing a talk about this book during the end of the pandemic, and she was it's a memoir of her mother and of herself. She suffered through disability throughout her life, and it's such an amazing portrait of this extraordinary strong and powerful woman. And it's filled with Riva Lehrer's amazing art. And it's a book of absolute beauty in terms of words and pictures. And I utterly fell in love with it. It's so honest. It's heartbreaking frequently, but it's also deeply, deeply wise. And it's a real sort of hymn to creativity and resistance. It's just astonishing. And she often likens herself to the golem, the figure from Jewish folklore. And it's just an astounding book. And that's Golem Girl by Riva Lehrer.
I have not heard of that book, but coincidentally, I am reading a book that has Gollum in the title as well. I'm reading The Gollum of Brooklyn, which came out, I think, a couple weeks ago, and it's absolutely fantastic, but that's for another time. My second pick is a graphic novelization of Elena Ferrante's My Brilliant Friend by Chiara Lagani and Mara Seri. I've definitely seen this idea trending lately, taking established novels and reimagining them as graphic novels, and this is published by Europa Editions, who puts out beautiful books. The writing takes already gorgeous prose and strips it down to its most poetic depictions. It follows the friendship between Raffaella and Elena, which begins when one friend takes the other's hand as they climb the stairs to the home of the neighborhood Brute. The story starts in the 50s outside of Naples and ends with the girls on the cusp of womanhood. I have not seen the HBO adaptation, but why not add a third way to consume this story? The pictures are sumptuous and moving, rendered in mostly neutral and darker tones so that when there is color, it really pops. And if you're new to the story, I think you'll like this book. And if you've already read Ferrante's novel or the entire series, I think this will serve to punctuate an already beautifully rendered novel. And again, that's My Brilliant Friend, the graphic novel by Chiara Lagani and Mara Seri, from the novel by Elena Ferrante. Edward, what is your final pick?
So my final pick is a very, very skinny book that is just utterly delightful. I've read it twice already, and it only came out a couple of months ago. And it's called Kappa by Ryunosuke Akutagawa. It's written from the point of view of patient number 23, a Japanese man in a lunatic asylum, and he explains that he at one point came across a kappa, which is a strange folkloric character, but from Japanese culture, and he follows this kappa underground and starts to live with him and other kappas. It's a sort of Alice in Wonderland experience, and he experiences their culture, and it's very strange, it's very funny, it's harrowing. Georges Louis Borges said it was enchanting and sometimes terrifying, and that's precisely it. It's just this beautiful little tale. And when the narrator comes back up to live with humanity anymore, after being underground, he discovers, very much like Gulliver, that he cannot stand humanity anymore. And it's just the most beautiful, tiny, tiny book published by New Directions. And it is just glorious, by Ryunosuke Akutagawa. And it's called Kappa.
Thank you. You've given me three books that I have not heard of. I love slim books. I love fat books. I love books of all sizes. So I'm so excited about these new books to add to my list. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. It has truly been an honor.
Oh, thank you, Jen, so very much for having me. It's been great.
I will link up to Edward Carey's Edith Holler, full of performance, theater, and Beatles aplenty, as well as all of the other books we discussed in the show notes, available for purchase on my bookshop.org shop, Books Are My People. And in the meantime, I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.